Tony, over to you. You've got half an hour.
Right, Marlene, thank you. Just tilt this up a little bit. It's okay, no. I mean, that'll do me fine. Right, well, first of all, yes, Moeen has just introduced my lineage a little bit, I suppose you'd say, working for the BBC. I don't know how many of you can remember Greater London Radio back in the 1990s and late 1980s. It was a really the place to be if you're a journalist, I think almost anywhere in the world, because we were dealing with lots of international news stories as a local radio station here in London. The audience was up over a million people. It was a very young news editor, a guy called James Cameron. His girlfriend was the news producer most days, and it really was an absolutely cooking place to be. What we were doing was getting our heads around various stories around the world, but obviously with a London focus and a big audience. And I suppose I also ought to start by thanking Moeen very much, sir, for inviting me here, because this is a brilliant subject for a journalist to get given, to look at. And I've been doing this over the last couple of weeks, really digging into some of the similarities between what we're getting in biblical prophecy and also what we see in the world today. There's none of this going on, really, in the mainstream media at all. And it should be. I mean, you could do a programme every week very easily, and I reckon you'd get an amazing audience too if you were to do it. So maybe that's a little proposal I can float out there as a little seed to sow, because the amount of things that we're seeing in the news every day nowadays is astounding, that you can actually link up with biblical prophecy. Survive on what they call in Ireland slivers of tin, which is next to no money, claiming benefits and that sort of thing, and the radio show I do in Bristol is all voluntary. I was on, for example, the BBC's Conspiracy Files programme about the 7/7 London bombings, because when I was at GLR I was covering the IRA bombing campaign in London for the BBC, and when the 7/7 bombings first happened I was immediately struck by grave anomalies in the so-called evidence we were being given, main one of which, I suppose, was the security services, MI5, having followed these three of the four bombers for years before the attacks, and yet somehow allowing them to get hold of explosives, allowing them to go to London, etc., having the Al Majarun under surveillance as well, very closely, and some would say controlling Al Majarun. So this sort of thing made me get to grips with the 7/7 bombings, and I've done an article on that which came out last year for the 10th anniversary, which I think really pulls together most of what I think is shows that the four guys who were accused of it probably didn't do it, and it was almost certainly the Israeli government, Mossad, involved very closely in actually perpetrating that attack. Anyway, that you can find on Washington's blog. Also the 9/11 forum, which we've been running since just after the 9/11 attacks, the 7/7 attacks. I think one thing I'd take home from the IRA coverage in Ireland was the way that you see now the Sunni and the Shia being kind of divided, set against each other, is very similar to the way that the Protestants and the Catholics in Northern Ireland were. Neither of which is communities, as particularly, you know, the clerics involved in Ireland were not perpetrators of terrorism, but the media spin on it did what is called hardening the sides, that is to say getting everybody to try and take a position one side or the other of this dividing line, to divide society in order to create division, confusion, divide and rule, I suppose. So where do you go in the Bible if you're trying to find some eschatology? I don't know what we've been. Can we go on to the next slide, please? These are some of the stations I worked in. Next. It's actually almost, well, I don't know how useful it's going to be having this with the light as it is, but we go to Daniel 9 in the Old Testament, Matthew 24, signs of the times, and most important, Revelation. And it's worth mentioning there was a real contest to get Revelation into the Bible. A lot of people didn't want it in there historically. Also, Christian church history. These important points we don't hear about. For example, Solomon's Temple, the building of Solomon's Temple, 1000 BC, roughly. Very important spot, because this is the temple where potentially, anyway, we're going to see big, great conflict. A lot of the conflict is over this temple, but what people don't realise is that in Revelation, it actually says that in heaven, in the New Jerusalem, there will be no temple. So Solomon is a great big figure. In building this temple, was not doing the right thing. God apparently dwells in tents, we hear in the Old Testament, not in the temple. This stone temple was the wrong thing to do. And this is interesting as well, I think, that the Freemasons pick out the Solomon as one of their great figures. You know, actually, he was a very divisive figure, and he was someone that caused great schisms. Of course, he was tempted and went away from God's path, which is interesting that the Masons take Solomon as one of their sort of gurus in a way. Then we had the progression of the church through the Jesus's baptism in 30 AD, the crucifixion and resurrection just 3 years later. In 33, then Constantine's the conversion of the Roman Empire, because the Romans couldn't cope with the secret society that in those days was Christianity, was doing very well as a secret society. So the Roman officials decided, right, we're going to have a counterfeit church, and we're going to say we'll accept this and we'll try and control it because we can't keep it down. And it's interesting to think that maybe in the future that Christian church might go back into that same mode where it has to go underground again. To a certain extent, it already is in places like China. And then we had the Reformation, 1517, the Great Schism in 1054. Interesting that in 1054 we had the schism. What will Russia's role, what will the Orthodox Church's role be? Because that was really the closest to the original church. We've had divisions and divisions of the church since then. And then the English Civil War here in Britain, very important, and in advancing the progress of what we heard from Clive about enclosure of land, privatisation of land, happened much, much accelerated by the English Civil War, and also the emergence of the British non-conformist tradition, that is to say the Methodist, the Baptist, the Quaker, which I'm a Quaker. And so... The subject matter, let's go to the next one here, is I think there are some of these things around which take you through biblical events in a much easier to see and easier to digest way. Here's the fall, for example. So the fall of man right at the beginning of the Bible. Very useful to see this in a visual form rather than just the words, because I think a lot of the time people have the Bible, they may call themselves Jewish, Christian, whatever, but they don't read it, they don't digest the information as much as they should. So I've been asked to talk about secret societies in prophecy. Let's go ahead a little bit. Which Bible do you use? I mean, this is the one I use. There's also the King James Version, but lots of different versions have been. One of them, of course, is the New King James. I think it's the New King James, New International Version, is owned by Rupert Murdoch, for example, so I wouldn't bother with that one. Next. Also, which books are in the Bible? This Old Testament pseudepigrapher. There's a lot of stuff which maybe, potentially, should be in the Old Testament, but isn't. Questions about that. And more for the New Testament as well. This is a very interesting book, which is the Jewish New Testament and the Jewish New Testament commentary. It's got a whole list of the prophecies in the Old Testament which Jesus fulfilled. So there's a very strong message going out to a lot of Messianic Jews saying, hang on a minute, you know, let's not wait any longer for the Messiah. He's already come. Yeah. So that's one of the most useful things in there. And also, of course, the commentary makes it very useful for Christians who don't have that Jewish perspective on the Old Testament. So there's Jesus on his, possibly the Olivet Discourse, because that's the one I want to talk about next, which is the parts of the Bible where, that's that from Matthew 24. The eschatological framework from the book of Revelation, I think, is fascinating and very, very clear, if you tease it out, as we journalists are supposed to do. First we've got the seven seals in Revelation, of which the first four seals are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, white, red, black and pale horse. Lots of different interpretations of what they may be. There they are. Why the four horsemen? Well, it's quite clear. If you can shut your eyes for a second and imagine the sound of horses' hooves outside your house. This is going really way back beyond the motor car, maybe to the Civil War. Horses arriving outside your home. What's going on? Something's changing. This is a warning of some sort. And this is, it seems very clear to me that the Four Horsemen is all about letting us know this and this and this, four things will happen, which will make it absolutely clear that we're in the end times and, you know, to get ready for the big one. Then we've got the seven trumpets and the seven bowls. It's all there in Revelation, and I've got a little handout I'll dish out afterwards, which just breaks some of this down into specific verses and specific events. Okay, secret societies. Well, this book is probably the best on the Freemasons, and that, I suppose, is Stephen Knight's book, The Brotherhood. He died just after this was published, but he handed all his papers on to someone else, a chap who lives not far from here, actually, Martin Short, who wrote this. And so once Stephen Knight had published his book, he had a whole load of information on Freemasonry, which he then republished after he died. Martin Short added into this great thick tome. And if anyone wants to invite Martin Short to speak, I'm sure he'll do that. He's a very decent chap. So here's your basic structure of Freemasonry. I don't think it's possible, really, in Britain to talk about secret societies without mentioning the Masons, really. They've been going a very long time, but they're part of a tradition. Okay, the most obvious secret society is the Mafia, isn't it? But you can go right way back to, say, ancient Babylon. And remember, of course, that when you talk about the Talmud, there are the different Talmudic traditions. There's Babylonian and then there's Jerusalem. So we've got this kind of opposition going right throughout history. So a lot of the influence is by the Babylonians. Religious cults we're talking about, effectively. Secret religious cults. Defined by blood oaths. Okay, blood oaths. For example, the Freemasons say they have a penalty if they violate, and you do this willingly when you join, that you will be severed in two, your body will be burnt to ashes, those ashes will be scattered over the face of the earth and watered by the four cardinal winds of heaven, that no trace or remembrance of so vile a wretch may longer be found among men. That's the oath the Freemasons swear of the third degree. So they're basically swearing away the right to their own life to the cult. And when they do that, of course, there's a threat of death. There's the noose, there's the dagger. And when you're in one of these cults, you're getting involved in something which is a very, very ancient tradition, which is separating you from the rest of humanity. And I think there's a very strong case for making sure that nobody in any public office should take such an oath. Anyone that does should be taken out of office. Because obviously your loyalty is to them, not us. I've studied the Bilderberg conferences. Money and power is all sort of very similar, very secretive organisation, which started just after the Second World War, where people in the Allied side who were traitors towards the end of the war, who'd done deals for basically for safe passage for the Nazis at the end of the war, that's where the Bilderberg conferences first came from. But this is really about money and power. It's not about God. So it's a very oppositional picture I'm painting here. Opposition to that biblical tradition. Also, with cults, you've got mimicry, haven't you? Anyone that looks into witchcraft, for example, has, in fact, very similar, in some cases identical oaths to Freemasonry. Anyone that's looked into that will see you have a coven of 13 witches, right? So you've got 12 disciples and Jesus. It's mimicry. You're taking from the biblical tradition and you're creating something which is in opposition to it, but you're stealing the ideas, if you see what I mean. So also the Knights Templar. Now, this is very relevant for today, really, because the crusade we're seeing in the Middle East right this minute really is very similar to the original crusade, the Christian crusades back in medieval times. There are all sorts of tricks played on people, honest Christians, to get them convinced to go to the Middle East. All sorts of tricks played by the Vatican at the time. For example, the letter of Prester John. I don't know if anyone's come across this, but this made people think, oh, there's another Christian kingdom and they're battling again in the Middle East, we must go and help them. So it's a kind of lies and psyops, nothing new, certainly happening back then. Orders of knighthood, very important as secret societies, your loyalty to those. Knights of Malta, another one. But some would argue, as Tim Cohen does in his book The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, he's a Messianic Jew in the US, that the Order of the Garter is really the head of these, with its 26, the Order of the Garter, 26, of course, is 213. So, you know, you could argue this is two covens. You've got a coven to protect the monarch, and you've got a coven to protect the heir to the throne. Put them two together, and you've got yourself a Order of the Garter, which is the longest order of oldest order of chivalry in the world, I believe. The Skull and Bone Society over in the United States as well, many will have come across that, using the skull and crossbones. Okay, so you put this all together, next, with religion, and you start to get, you look at the eye at the top there, you start to get into the higher degrees of Freemasonry and the Illuminati, very important little organisation, often dismissed, but absolutely historical. And the book I would thoroughly recommend anyone that's interested in this subject, very good book by a guy called John Robison, who was a professor of natural philosophy. He was an inventor, basically, a part of the Industrial Revolution, a close friend of James Watt, who invented the steam engine. And Robison explained what was going on, and he was himself a Freemason, so it was really interesting. He saw this way that Freemasonry was changing and turning into something he didn't like. He was also a very good speaker of French and German, so he was at these conferences in Europe where the Illuminati was formed in order to control Freemasonry around Europe in the mid-late 1700s, 1782 to be precise, big conference.
The
Old
Helen's
Park,
was it?
That's right, yeah. Let's get into the Bible a little bit more here. Graven images in secret. This is something you're not supposed to do. This is Deuteronomy 27:15. And that's part of one of the Ten Commandments. Now, the Knights Templar, this is what they did. It's exactly what they did. Graven images in secret. They had ebony skulls they worshipped. If you go into that, you'll find that was what they were up to. They weren't Christians at all. They were part of a cult. Also, the beast. Great little quote. This is from 2 Thessalonians 2:7. The beast doesn't enter the world stage unexpected. Comes from a great lineage of rebellion. Now that's paraphrasing, that's not an exact quote from the Bible, but a great lineage of rebellion. So he's saying again, he's saying this secretive tradition that's been running for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years, that's where you'll find the beast will come from. I think these are quite important and fascinating that, you know, that such a detail is in there, really. Also the abomination of desolation, which is talked about in the book of Revelation, the false Christ. Very, I think, fascinating idea that there would be difficult to know exactly how to interpret these things, but certainly the Antichrist is talked about as somebody who will suffer a fatal wound and then come to life again. Now, it seems to me that what's happening there is some kind of false Christ being created in order to convince, I suppose, Zionists, etc., that hey, the Messiah's come, guys. Well, the idea is this is a man-made fake, or maybe even using magic, who knows. Okay, so to finish on this half, I have to hurry up, but 1986, another kind of secret society. 1986, Duncan Campbell, the investigative journalist, did a series on the BBC called Secret Society, which actually led to the sacking of the Director General and really was the end of the BBC as an independent force. John Burt was brought in when I was working there in the early 1990s, and you could see the whole place was being destroyed, a bit like the National Health Service is now, by having this kind of setting up kind of loads of subdivisions, so you had to go through managers to get anywhere, and you weren't part of one big wholesome unit, which was able to function as one whole body. So that series is fascinating because it goes into secret cabinet committees, which is the way that decisions are really made in this country. So that was the one show they really didn't want the BBC to show. And under the Thatcher government, that was where we saw really the end of the BBC as what it should have been, which is independent journalism funded by the public. Biblical icons. Well, you've got to mention, I suppose, look at this. I mean, this is Illuminati. This is MI5's sign. I managed to get hold of this just before it disappeared off the internet, and it was just when I was working in Oxford, and I'm afraid pretty much every time you ever see this sign on the internet, as you may have done, it was from the original one which I managed to grab before it disappeared. So maybe someone was shoving it in my direction, I'm not quite sure. And this is John Robison's Proofs of the Conspiracy. Fantastic read, actually. And there he is, the man himself. You might recognise that from the back of the dollar bill. It's all pretty clear, announcing the birth of a new secular order. So in other words, order. In other words, like the order of the garter, away from God, nothing to do with God. And here's some of these, sort of crazy people you find in the English countryside from time to time. Peculiar lot. Okay, so prophecy in the news. The news, the media, is our nervous system of humanity. It's the information that's our brain, it's our, you know, how we feel and touch our way around the world. And I can see all the time, particularly Rupert Murdoch, but there are all sorts of attempts to poison that. It's like sarin gas in your nervous system sometimes. But having said that, it is contested, so they're very clever. It's not all lies. It's mostly the truth, but crucial, critical lies. Also important to understand the beast, which is talked about by John in the Bible as the Antichrist. Man is an animal, right? Get this into your head. In fact, children, of course, in our schools are now taught this. Basically, Darwin is accepted as fact, as truth. We are animals. And you know, it's interesting that they're using the term the beast, because actually this is part of what this is all about. It's about getting rid of, denying the idea of creation, of any kind of divine spark or whatever. We're just animals, and the top dogs are going to tell the rest what to do. False prophet and antichrist. Well, these are two figures in the book of Revelation, the false prophet and the antichrist. One spiritual leader, or anti-spiritual if you want to call it like that, or one political leader. Just using this example, Archbishop Rowan Williams, great guy in lots of ways, but fascinating to see that he's also a druid. He went through all the initiation rites to become a druid, which is, of course, a domestic pre-Christian religion in this country. Probably the most important thing to talk about, if you're talking about prophecy, is money. Because the Bible talks about 666, the mark of the beast, in Revelation 13. Now, on every barcode, maybe even on the bottom of this, yeah, there you go. They're everywhere. The guard bars on the barcodes give you the number 666. So it's always to do with buying and selling. And the Bible talks about that. You won't be able to buy or sell unless you have the mark of the beast. Also interesting, I think, that the mark of the beast is not just one thing. It's either in the right hand, maybe this little fleshy bit here, or the forehead. So you've immediately got a kind of separation of the elite and the workers. Yeah, we are the brain people, we control things, and everyone else is our slave with the mark of the beast. We're talking about RFID chips here. We've gone, haven't we? I don't know if there was a debate in Parliament. If there was, I must have missed it. But we went to chip and pin, where we don't have to sign our name anymore when we're buying something. Then we went over to contactless. Everyone here use contactless payments? It's nice and easy, isn't it? But we're basically there. The technology is there from RFID chip implants, so that the beast system is ready to go. And if you go online, you'll find there's a great little hashtag on Twitter, for example, called Beast Tech. Beast Tech, where you can find a lot of this stuff out there. The technology is there in place pretty much for this system. As we know, the banks control pretty much everything. They only control much of our media. They can take you out like a bank, like a tank used to do in the war, Second World War. The banks have taken over that role. If they don't like what you're doing, they just buy you out or bring you down by one means or another. Banks are incredibly powerful. Mainstream media, what I've seen in the BBC are lots and lots of Zionists. I've got nothing against them as individuals at all, but you see that this is a definitely an attempt to put people of a particular point of view on the radio. I mean, for example, on Five Live the other morning, Emma Barnett was talking about her. I mean, she was talking about how, I think it was in Austria, saying, well, why should you be upset about Muslims coming into Austria now? And why is it causing... Because are you saying that it was just as like when the Jews were there in the Second World War? And this guy just pointed out to me, he said, look, the Jews have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years and had integrated really well. What's happening in Austria now is that the Islamic people are not integrating. It's not happening. So it was just complete, you know, lack of understanding of the situation. I mean, I personally experienced quite a lot of people with very biased views in very powerful positions. And it was almost like a kind of Orwellian groupthink going on. So today we're getting ego, pride and vanity. Quite a lot, haven't we, on the television? The 2 Timothy 3, people will be lovers of their own selves. Well, this sounds to me like the X Factor, you know, that people may have a bit of talent, but, you know, let's celebrate things of the mind just as well as kind of promoting youth culture, almost like a cult. You know, traditionally, the great cultures across the earth have valued older people for their wisdom. Now it seems it's almost all focus on cult, a kind of cult-like focus on sex and attractiveness of youth. Now this is about a bit like the Brexit referendum. We were told, oh, you're betraying the youth. Yes, but the elder people, the elders of society, remember what things were like before. The young people don't. Also, another thing to talk about, when you talk about icons, is the Aleppo child, this way that these icons are used in the mainstream media to get our emotions. We are hardwired to care about children. That's just the way we are. And they know that. So they'll show us a child in Aleppo. And they'll now show Putin as the boogeyman. They won't really talk so much about Mosul or about Sana'a in Yemen, but they'll focus on the one place on the mainstream press every night. Also, people like Abu Qatada, interesting that he was sent over to Jordan, and then they said, well, this guy's not really done anything. We don't see he's done anything wrong. And yet he's still in the Daily Mail and in the British newspapers. He's the boogeyman. Got to mention, if you're talking about prophecy, the rapture, the dispensationalists. I mean, I don't think it's at all biblical. I think this is just a kind of bit of nonsense which has been put in there, injected into the tradition deliberately. And I've got some notes that I'll put around later which I've got some of this stuff on, but I think I'll finish with a clear look at one of the things I've teased out, which I think is really important, which has been missed by a lot of others. But that is to say, the biblically based faiths are under attack, a massive attack. A destruction program has been created for us. We can start, and it probably is before this, right? But I think in the modern era, it starts in 1933 with the pagan Nazi party comes to power with its aim to wipe out the entire rabbinic tradition of Europe. That was one of the main aims, covertly, of the Nazis, to wipe out the rabbinic tradition. They would do deals with Jewish people if they thought it was going to help the party. The main aim was to wipe those ideas out, that culture out. 1947, the State of Israel was established. This is the Crusaders' own holy land. And also, a very important thing that does is it also discredits Judaism. To have a organisation or to have a state set up which is twisting prophecy and actually acting in a very, very evil manner, this is discrediting Judaism around the world. And I think that's, they've been quite effective at that. Many people will look at the Israeli state and think, these Jewish people, they're terrible, they're crazy, whatever. And of course, Ephraim Mervis, who's the chief rabbi, he will say, I represent all Jews in England. In fact, he said it on the radio the other day. He doesn't. He doesn't. He certainly doesn't. Certainly there's important areas of Orthodox Judaism that want nothing to do with the sort of things that he's got to say, because he's a staunch supporter of the State of Israel. So in the 1960s and 70s here as well, we had great freedom in the arts in Britain. But at the same time, as a kind of Trojan horse, UK laws against abortion and fornication were all repealed. So you've got that kind of biblical tradition that was here in Britain was sort of quietly dispatched, whilst you had the kind of Beatles and the 60s and 70s arts and drama revolution. Of course, it served another purpose, which was to get everyone in Britain to get a television set in their home, because there was some really good drama around on the TV screens. More recently, we've had David Cameron and Theresa May, who claim to be Christians. Well, just last week, Theresa May was talking about this, wasn't she? I use the Bible when I make decisions. This is another way of discrediting the faith. Most people will look at that and they'll think, well, yeah, but your decisions you're making are stealing from the poor to give to the rich. That's not Jesus' teaching. This kind of thing, you know, supporting illegal wars, you know, supporting the Americans in the Middle East and the kind of stuff. This is, I think, a really important psyop to discredit the faith. Very powerful. So, finally, let's look at the positive side here, right? It's not easy, but the positive is the signs of the times are there for us, right? God has set a plan to say, look, guys, you're not going to be totally all at sea and on your own. Also, these things are contested, as I've shown through history. It's not just complete control. There's a contest going on. And also, on Christ's return, this is a great thing to look forward to. It's going to happen. We may never live to see it. We probably won't live to see it. Interesting as well, isn't it, that we hear about ice and fire. We were hearing about that earlier on. Actually, the two go together. If you have nuclear war, you then get your nuclear winter. This is, you know, no joke. The world freezes over pretty much after a nuclear war. So maybe it's not one or the other. Maybe it's both. I said I was trying to cheer you up. That's not very cheerful. But anyway, the final thing I think is one of the things I mentioned right at the very beginning, which is the temple being the focus. Quite clearly, this is contested. And it might be nice to do this conference, maybe bring a few people in from other parts of the world to do it at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, because this is the site which is going to be very important in the future. I don't think there's much doubt about that with the Third Temple Institute trying to get rid of the mosque. This site is an important place, and like I say, if we're going to contest it, that's a good place to do it. Because, as Revelation makes absolutely clear, in the new heaven and in the new earth to come, there will be no temple. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Tony.